Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky, and I am the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I am now honored to introduce this morning's speaker, Tanisha Jackson. Dr. Tanisha M. Jackson joined the African American Studies Department in the College of Arts and Sciences as the Executive Director of the Community Folk Art Center and a Professor of Practice in African American Studies in spring 2019. At Syracuse University, Jackson teaches classes in African diaspora art, including Art of the Black World and Contemporary Black Film. Prior to joining Syracuse University, Jackson returned to her alma mater, The Ohio State University, to serve as the assistant director of the Frank W. Hale Jr. Black Cultural Center. Prior to OSU, she worked at the University of Cincinnati from 2016 to 2018, where she worked as a senior instructional designer in the Center of Excellence in e-learning and adjunct professor in the Africana Studies Department. There she taught Black popular culture, Black film, art, and literature courses. Jackson's research focuses on the representation of Black women's wellness in contemporary art and popular culture in multimedia and community spaces. She has published peer review articles internationally and nationally, including Me Telling, Recovering the Black Female Body Through Digital Narratives and Mixed Methods, and Visual Images and Worldview in a Self-Reflective Millennial Space. Concurrently, Jackson's other research focuses on e-learning and Africana studies, in which she focuses on shared pedagogical strategies specific to online and hybrid courses that are not typically adopted in face-to-face Africana studies courses. Jackson earned her Executive Master's of Business Administration in 2013 from the University of Toledo. She also earned a PhD in art education in 2010, an MA in African American Studies in 2006, and a BA in English in 2003, all from The Ohio State University. Please join me in welcoming Tanisha Jackson.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Good morning. First, let me say I need to cut that bio down. That's long. That's pretty lengthy. Emily, thank you. And B, also thank you for inviting me to speak this morning here. And I'm really excited. I woke up this morning and I was just like, okay, are they going to cancel? I don't know. And then I remember, this is Syracuse. This is nothing, right? And so, you know, as you already know, I'm coming from Columbus, Ohio, so that's where I'm from, and I've been here for a year, so I'm no stranger to snow, but my God, a lot of it. It's just the accumulation of snow, right? And so, but I'm here, and I'm really interested to talk to you about what I know best, which is community-based arts and wellness, and how I merge my passion for community-based arts and wellness through art within the African diaspora. So I think that this is very fitting, especially since this is Black History Month, my understanding, but also because of the work that we all do within community engagement, right? Which really moves across multiple communities and has the impact for really transformation. So that's what I'll be talking to you about, and specifically the work that me and many others are doing at the Community Folk Arts Center, which I currently am in charge of. So let's get right into it. Okay, so what is community engagement? So based off of this definition, community engagement and social engagement are rooted in John Dewey's conception of progressive education. And education is the path to civic responsibility and essential to developing and maintaining democratic values. So Dewey, among many others, really believes that it is through education that we are able to engage the community, right? In a very structured way through curriculum, that we're able to really foster these democratic values and tap into grassroots communities, right? So that this whole development of just not just one community, but multiple communities can take place. And that's really important, especially when we think about today's climate, right? And so it's because it's based off of that that community-based arts has developed, because there is this recognition that creativity, right, fostered through education is really the stimulus for impactful community engagement. So it's because of that that we need to talk about what is community art. And community art is a creative form of community engagement that embodies aspects of social practice art and community-based art education. So when I look at community art, I'm looking at art that really connects a oftentimes a professional artist or a practicing artist that connects with a community through project-oriented art and specifically participatory and collaborative art. So that may mean like a mural project, or you know, the coming together where the artist specifically may have an idea about an arts project, but through participatory action, art or research, they work with a community to really develop that idea more closely in alignment with that community's values and also their needs. So it's through this collaboration, but more so participatory collaboration, where community members have some ownership in the project and they're not being told what to do, that community-based art or community art can really shape, right, into an authentic and meaningful project. And so professional artists working in grassroots settings to create art in the public interest that represents grassroots issues is the main focus. And I can't emphasize that enough. It's not enough to just come in with your ideas about what you want to give to the community as someone who wants to be involved in community engagement or an artist that wants to be involved in community engagement, but it takes having meaningful conversations, right? Gauging what type of message that the community may want to convey through a community art project. And so that really becomes the fusion, if you will, with community art and community engagement. And from there, there's a connection with public welfare and civic responsibility, right? The people having these conversations, meaning the community members as well as the practicing artists, begin to really think about strategic messaging, if you will, through the arts. And when we talk about art, it's not just visual art that I'm speaking of, but it is also performative art, spoken word poetry, which I'll talk a little bit about. That's happening at the Community Folk Arts Center, theater, musical performances. So anything visual or performing art, all of this is a part of this community-based art, what this can look like, and especially when it involves groups of people and conversation. So we know what community engagement is, we know what community art is. Now one must ask, well, what is community-based arts education? Because remember, Dewey said that it's education, right? He added this factor of education to connect to, that's connected to community engagement. And so community-based arts education is an area within arts education in which creative community engagement, service learning, and social practice art intersects. And that's a lot, right? So we have the community engagement, engaging the community, getting involved in the community's needs. And then we have this service learning, which, you know, I don't know if we would call it a key word, but that's definitely a popular word within academe, right? We encourage our students to get involved in service learning. And do we know what service learning is?
I think that's a new word.
Is that a new word here? Okay.
We should call it civic internships.
Same thing, for the most part. you know, oftentimes students nowadays are encouraged to apply their learning, right, within communities. And so service learning classes, and I used to develop these classes, it's been a long time, and also engage students in classes in which they would learn, right, theories, ideas, and but then also the curriculum within a class, within the class they're teaching, is connects them within the community so that they can apply what they're learning, right? So it could be an internship, it could be, you know, for example, a practicum, but from there, say I'm teaching students about some sort of social justice through nonprofit artwork. So what social justice means to the nonprofit world. Through service learning, it could be that part of my curriculum makes it mandatory that students have to have an internship at a nonprofit organization and to either contribute their skill sets that they're learning in the classroom setting or whatever the needs are for that organization as part of the practicum. Okay, so, and then the social practice art that I've been describing, when all of that intersects, that's community-based arts education. And so community-based arts education creates a space for social discourse on issues of human experience. So this is very much, you know, the conversation that takes place, that's fostered through the curriculum. It is asset-focused, community-based teaching and learning experience. Now, this is important because oftentimes when people do work in the community, you can run the risk of wanting to approach community from a deficit model, right? I want to help these people. They're so, you know, they're struggling, they're poor, they have these barriers. And that is coming into a community, you know, from a deficit, right, position, whereas an asset-based position focuses on the positive, right, connectivity of a community. So it's not, you're not the savior of the world, you don't have your superhero cape, you don't assume that the community that you're engaging with, right, just is in this overwhelming need. But what you assume is that this is a community that has strengths, right? That has knowledge that you don't have, that has skills that you may or may not have, and you're coming together to put together a overall project that speaks back to the welfare and the civic needs, of the said community, right? So you have something to contribute as an educator, as an artist, or an art educator, artivist, if you will, art activist, if that's your role, or a community engagement officer, social justice officer. The community has something to contribute as well. And in fact, if you do this work correctly, the community is also teaching you, the expert. And that's very powerful, right? That's when you know that there's not only, you're not only allowed in the community, but there's actual consent, if you will, right? Because community members involved in community-based arts and engagement and civics, what they have to do is agree, right, to participate and not be forced. And I can't emphasize that enough. Oftentimes, people will go into schools and other community settings with an idea, but there has to be very much this symbiotic relationship between artists or teachers, educators, leaders, if you will, or whatever you're bringing to the table in the community. And it takes place in educational institutions and communities. So this is very important to the work that I do, because the Community Folk Arts Center, and I probably should have explained that. I don't know if that was in the bio, so I will in a minute. You have a brochure. But the Community Folk Arts Center is a, I'll explain it now, is a center that is a unit of the Department of African American Studies, which I'm also a professor in, right? So it makes sense that there's that connectivity. It is a it's an organization at Syracuse University that is 48 years old. So we're super proud of that because we are preparing for our 50th year anniversary. And it is a community space or organization that was built out of student protests. So do any of you know what's going on at Syracuse University right now? Yes. So we're in a very interesting time because our students are, you know, are in protests, are in are on strike, teaching assistants, and it's very interesting that this that we are here at this time now in 2020 for whatever reasons. When we think about the history of Syracuse University, which is now celebrating 150 years, right? Part of the greatness of this university is the gains that were made because of intellectual thought and also some of the uncomfortable situations like protests and activism. It is what has brought us here today. So we have to look at all the whole, the complete narrative of the institution, understand that out of some of the discomforts and the issues, right, that have come up within communities, right, surrounding SU and within SU, are is a part of that history and that legacy is protest. And so beginning in 1967, and then really with manifesting in 1969, 100 plus students protested because of the political, socio-political climate at the university. And out of that, the university gained the, at the time, African American Studies program, now the Department of African American Studies. It gained the MLK Library because there was the understanding that there needed to be a curriculum that represented a population of students, particularly African American students at the time, who did not see themselves within the curriculum that was being taught at the university. And it also, the university gained the Community Folk Arts Center, which I'm the executive director of. So what we see is that there are real outcomes when protests met with strategic, right, real strategy and really a organized, effective organization, there is real impact and tangible evidence of the outcomes of what that, of what can happen. So it's not just people making noise or making trouble, but institutional change. And so I say that to say, regardless of what you're thinking about what's going on now, that we now have an organization, the Community Folk Arts Center, which is part of community engagement through the arts, because that is really a part of the foundation of our mission and vision, focusing on art from the African diaspora. Because at the time, and our beginnings is really in 1972, there were no arts institutions that really provided a space and a platform for artists from the African diaspora. Not in the museums, not in the galleries, not in the gallery boutiques. And to this day, the Community Folk Arts Center is the only cultural black arts institution in the entire city of Syracuse. Which means that there is still a need, right, to provide a platform for artists from the African diaspora, as well as other artists that we support. So we support SU students who exhibit work. I currently have to fly out today to Lubin House because the Palace Gallery, we have an exhibition where artists, SU artists are featuring, one SU artist curated a show to feature artists that are underrepresented, okay? So, that is why I'm particularly interested in community-based arts education, and I will tie this into wellness in a second, because the Community Folk Arts Center is an educational institution that also merges, and this is important, right, the Syracuse community, local community, with the SU community. So how beautiful is that? That through the vehicle of art, right, we are able to connect people here in multiple communities looking for cultural outlets, looking for a place to gather, looking for a space to convey certain concerns and ideas going on within the city through the vehicle of art. And then also SU students, staff, and faculty members are also able to join in through programming and exhibitions. So currently we have an exhibition on display that my colleague, Professor Joan Bryant, put together with her students through in a class, right? That and it was a photo, it's a photo exhibition that focuses on the civil rights movement. And so through her curriculum, integrated with students curating these photographs, they now have an exhibition on display that gives us a visual history of the civil rights movement. And I encourage you all to really visit it. It's stunning. It's beautiful black and white photos. But that's just one of many examples of how the Community Folk Arts Center serves as this vehicle to engage, right, multiple communities, but really bringing SU students down from the hill as well as faculty and staff and creating, fostering the conversations that need to take place, right? We want them to be well-rounded students having this liberal arts education, but also we want it to be practical and meaningful so that they can give back to the communities that they say they're interested in serving. And that's community engagement through the arts. Okay, so what is wellness? Because part of this presentation talks about wellness. And there's a difference. Oftentimes you'll hear people say health and wellness. And I thought, you know, well, what does that mean? Because isn't health wellness? I mean, what's the difference, right? So I did some research because that's what I do, lifelong learner. And I found out that wellness is an active process through which people become aware of and make choices toward a more successful existence. So it is action-oriented when it comes to seeking out healthy outcomes within your life. That's very different than health. Health, its primary determinants the primary determinants of a person's health are based on social, economic, physical environment, as well as a person's individual characteristics and behaviors. So it could be biologically determined, right? It could be socially and economically determined. So because if you live in a community, say for example, here in Syracuse, I-81, right? There's this whole issue with this, with the freeway. And this is a narrative that's in many other cities. Even my own city went through this, where we had to take down a freeway. There's a grid that's been, you know, implemented. And so all this unrest and issues concerning that. But what people are also concerned about is not necessarily the change in a traffic pattern, but we have to be mindful, if you don't already know, that there's a community of people who live right underneath that freeway, who inhale the exhaust, right, from that freeway, who have a lot of other health issues and concerns because of the close proximity of that freeway. And some people may say, well, why don't they just move, right? There's also an issue that my understanding, I'm new to this community, so help me out, but these are members from the 15th Ward. And do we know the history of the 15th Ward? Right? So a community that was already displaced many, many years ago that don't have the economic resources to move, and in many ways are there not necessarily by choice, but by circumstance. And I'm just giving one example of how, you know, health determinants is not just you not eating the right food or exercising, but how oftentimes it can be imposed on you because of certain circumstances that come with it. But every day we make choices that are critical to us seeking out wellness, regardless of our social, our situation, right? And sometimes wellness is not just physical health, but it's mental and emotional health. So what are we doing to ensure that we are well and we are whole as individuals, regardless of the primary determinants that already are impacting your health condition right now? And that's something that we should concern, everybody should concern themselves, right? Who are we talking to, right, for emotional soundness? What type of activities are we doing? What type of balance do we have in our life? What can we do to activate the wellness in our life? So, I found a connection between art and wellness. And I value that because what's not in the bio is that long before those degrees, and which means I'm just really tired, by the way. But long before that, my educational attainment and my professional experience, Tanisha, right, little girl, was an artist or is an artist, which means that I was engaged in the arts and without knowing like how this would look, right, in my adult life. And it's something that has provided, or which activates wellness within myself, and I have recognized that it activates wellness among others. Regardless if you are someone who knows who has the skill set of a Picasso or a Van Gogh or a stick figure drawer, right? You do not have to be good at art to have it impact you in a positive way. But as human beings, and this is the humanist in me, right, because I come out of the arts and the humanities, we all benefit from the arts. The biological and physical sciences are important, are amazing, and are in fact connected to art if you really think about it. And I know I was pre-med long enough to kind of understand that. I took a lot of courses that I don't need. I was really successful at it, but didn't like it. So I know both worlds, right? We need biological and physical sciences. We need the STEM, if you will. But it is the humanities, right, that centers us and really keeps our humanity intact, right? It gives us the skills to have the conversations we need, the creativity to be able to take STEM skills and create starts with the arts and starts with the humanities. It's what keeps us civil, quite honestly. Right, so I recognize that through art, right, whether you are an artist or you are a community engaging with art, that there are opportunities for wellness. And there are opportunities for us to foster civic responsibilities that add to our wellness. All of that is connected. And so I specifically look at what's called the BREATHE model. One thing that you should also know about me, that my personal research focuses on Black women artists and wellness. And that's actually the book that I'm writing. And so Black women in particular are the most underserved when it comes to healthcare and other issues. And so this activation of wellness, I'm particularly concerned with, and specifically how artists help to foster that. And I looked at the BREATHE model, which is coming from theories that focus with that population as well as other minority populations or populations in general. I think it applies to anyone because we all need this in our lives. But I looked at this as a guide to see if, in fact, the work that we do at the Community Folk Arts Center is helping to engage people through wellness. So BREATHE is an acronym that helps us to pinpoint what wellness looks like. So let me take you through it. B is for balance. Can we agree that we all need balance in our lives?
Oh, that's boring and dull.
That, you said balance is boring and dull?
Dull.
Oh, okay, yeah. I need more balance, so I definitely do. I mean, yes, I literally, well, I won't even tell you what I did yesterday, but but I just know that I need it. So balance means to engage in the purposeful repositioning of one's commitments such that all priorities are addressed. So I know that if I'm really good and I'm focused on my job and I'm at CFAC at 10 o'clock at night, that is not balance. Because 2-1, I'm neglecting other areas. Sometimes it's necessary, but you have to check in with yourself to see how you are really, you know, implementing balance within your life. And so there are ways in which we can seek balance. Rather, it could be like organizing your time. It could be having accountability partners and checking in. But balance is part of this acronym for wellness. Then there's R for reflection. Set aside time for contemplation and performing emotional cognitive audits. Is that pretty clear? Yeah. So this introspection of where am I at, right? Am I okay? Do I need to talk to someone? We have to reflect, because if you're just zipping and running, which is very easy to do, you know, then sometimes we miss out on the cues that let us know that we don't have balance and there are other things going on in our lives which eventually manifest, right, itself physically. And that's where the health kicks in with the wellness. That's where wellness, when we take out that, the we part of this can become illness. So energy, reinvigorate goals and set up a path toward achieving them. Okay, so oftentimes part of the issues of not being well is because we are ignoring our own personal goals and achievements, right? And part of that comes with the resentment and the anxiety of not really implementing that. So if you reinvigorate your goals, and that takes away the disappointment in life, among other things, but also set up a strategic path to achieve them, that contributes to your wellness. Association, create and maintain social networks that promote, affirm, and encourage wellness. That is very important. And one of the ways in which I focus on that is to look at collectives. How are people coming together, right, to build community? This is particularly important within community engagement. Our associations are important. Our friendships, our work relationships, the way we gather, and the conversations we have that contribute to balance, that are a part of reflection, that can help us to create paths toward achievement, oftentimes are fostered through our associations. We have to talk to people as social beings at some point. We have to engage in the world. And when you're in isolation, there are many studies that prove that that becomes problematic. So when you strategically and purposely, right, connect to associations, it could be a fraternity, a sorority, it can be your church or mosque or synagogue, it can be a girls group or a guys group or just your buddy, whatever. Those associations, those strategic associations, are really a part of your wellness. Transparency. Actively avoid remaining silent about painful experiences. And this is where the work of art really comes into play, because art is just another form of narrative, of storytelling, if you will. And specifically, when you're working in community settings, and you are creating, say for example, it is a mural or it is a community-based art, well, you are putting together a narrative through performance, dance, or visual arts that there's opportunities to really talk about the experiences that impact you, especially painful experiences. And so many artists, including myself and community art educators, which is me as well, will use art to help people to be transparent about the issues that impact their lives. Healing. Look for ways to nurture wellness in self and others. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory, right? Not just for yourself, but within your associations, how are you looking to nurture wellness? And then empowerment. Enlist one's own agency by accessing internal power sources and taking ownership of one's own wellness. So your agency and how you seek out wellness, how you taking overall ownership of that can be strategically done through the art that you engage with or the community and practices that you want to employ. I'm going to speed this up. So community-based arts and wellness examples. So at the Community Folk Arts Center, located at 805 East Genesee Street. I'm telling you that for a reason, right? Because I want to see everybody at the Community Folk Arts Center. Some I already have seen. I want to thank you for patroning us. But it's my business to let you know that, to get people through the door. So I've done my job today. But at the Community Folk Arts Center, we currently have programming that reflects the BREATHE model. And I'm happy to say this because a lot of this new programming is new. And like I said, I've been here for a year. My 1 year anniversary was January. So, so excited about that. But with that being said, we specifically have a program called Wellness Wednesday. So that every Wednesday we have yoga. So it's yoga, yeah, Wellness Wednesdays and yoga at the Community Folk Arts Center. I believe it happens from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. in our dance studio. And so if you want to take a lunch break or want to come down, I have somebody that engages community members or anybody through yoga as a means of practicing wellness. So this is the kickoff for a program that focuses on specifically on wellness. Also, we have open mic. Now, last month, we're still in February, right? Yes. Yeah. So last month, our chief diversity officer contacted me and wanted to put together a program called She Rose of Poetry, right? It was a part of the celebration of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and it was a space for to acknowledge women at the time within the programming. So community artists as well as SU students came to this event. We invited poets to come and to share their poetry, and specifically women. And it was a beautiful event. It was well attended. They said this is the inaugural, which means that I have to do this again. But most importantly, we heard the community and identified that there was a need to have more poetry, open mic poetry, spoken word. And so because of the impact of that one event, we have a program the third Wednesday of every month, or is the second? What does it say? Second? Second, yeah. Okay, thank you. I'm like, yeah, it does say second. I gotta know what's going on in my space. The second Wednesday of every month, we have an open mic poetry event. And so we've had one since She Rose of Poetry, and it has involved SU faculty, administrators, and students. But this is an opportunity for people to really talk about the issues, right, that impact them. And this would be a really good example about the transparency part of BREATHE, right? Because out of the poetry, there's celebration, but there's also opportunities for people to be transparent about what impacts them personally and communally. Okay. Here you see examples of, on the left, these are students from a high school that are a part of the Creative Arts Academy. The Creative Arts Academy is our longest running program at the Community Folk Arts Center. It is as old as the Community Folk Arts Center, 48 years old. And it brings young people within Syracuse, within the city of Syracuse, to the Community Folk Arts Center to engage in art classes. And I think this is really amazing because now we are fostering the next generation of artists as well as patrons within the arts, not just at the Community Folk Arts Center, but also we have to think about other cultural and arts institutions. So they get used to coming to a space that nurtures their creativity, that allows them to engage in activities that help them at an early age to focus on wellness, then that is one, as engaging the community through the arts, and particularly a young demographic of students, and then two, making sure that wellness activities, whether it's through the art curriculum or just being at the Community Folk Arts Center in and of itself, starts at an early age so that people, you don't have to wait until you're older to say, oh my gosh, I need to, you know, be healthy and have practice wellness within my life, right? So this is another way in which we're engaging the community through art and through arts and through wellness. And then on the left-hand side is a community member, Jose Miguel. And who has been to Jose Miguel's show? From Cuba to Q's, one person. He also has a beautiful young people's theater. And I'm blanking on the name, I should know. Say it one more time.
La Joven Guardia,
right, Guardia. And every year they have a play. And he puts in his time and his energy and his resources, right, to make sure that there's an outlet for students. And the Community Folk Arts Center is their home for performance. So we're very proud of that partnership. A community member, right? This is his passion. In addition to that, he also has his one-man play, and we are going to celebrate its 10-year anniversary. And so big things are coming. And so I'm trying to get him a huge stage. That's a whole other thing. So, but those are examples of where community meets art and there are opportunities for wellness, because within the narrative, particularly his Cuba to Q's narrative, there's this reflection, if you will, right? And he goes through the whole breathe model and what that means about how he has developed and grown and evolved as a man, right, in this community, leaving one community and the other, having different cultural and personal experiences, and out of that, how he has come out of it whole and well, and he gives back to the community in the Community Folk Arts Center through art. Are we seeing the connection? Okay, great. From there, this is a community art collective of artists that comes together. They come together to talk about their artwork and how they can be more visible through art. So that's an art collective. This is an example of association practices within the BREATHE model. And on the right, this is a space where people who engage with art exhibitions can write their thoughts and ideas and reflect, right, on their experiences at the Community Folk Arts Center. They're empowered, if you will, to really have conversations, either verbally, but particularly through writing, about what they're experiencing and how it connects with them and also the communities that they belong to. Recently, we had an event, the Mark Lomax Quartet. And the Mark Lomax Quartet is a group of four men who came from different parts of the country, really the world. One guy came from Tijuana. And they were brought together. In fact, the office, Be Your Office, helped to sponsor this, community engagement, to talk about 400 years of the African diaspora, and specifically how through the movement of song, and talks about the journey of the African diaspora. So if you don't know, in Jamestown, Virginia, 1619, it's the first documented experience that we have that some 20 and odd Africans were brought to this country. That kicked off what we know as the African American experience. No, there actually were other Africans that were brought prior to that, but this was the first documented. So a lot of people will start the time clock at 1619, and we just hit 400 years because it's not just within the United States, but the African diaspora includes Latin America, right? Europe, all over the world, you're gonna find people from the African diaspora. And you see the impact of African cultures throughout the world, okay? So that through music, they've been traveling all over the country, performing at many institutions, many academic institutions, and then having a dialogue about where do we go from here. Also, there's the Gerald Veasley and Jasmine Gent, who also were a part of what we call the JMAT series. So both of these are examples of journey of music through the African diaspora. The master class, this was also a master class because SU local musicians as well as SU students were able to connect with these world-renowned jazz artists. He's a bassist, she plays the saxophone, and to actually play with them and get teaching. And that fosters community and is community engagement through the arts. And everybody was happy and whole, right? And then there are many others that I have, Painting with a Twist, Teen Competition, but I just want to give you different examples of how we are engaging multiple communities through the arts in an effort to really foster wellness. Thank you.
We're just going to open up for questions.
I came in here expecting to hear about one other area, and maybe you have mentioned it, or maybe it's passé. That could be with my age. Okay. The area is the public art with the involvement of the people in creating the art that is to be put into public places. I used to be able to walk along Warren Street, mm-hmm. and the parking garage has a series of large windows. Each of those windows had a piece of public art from a different organization.
Yes.
You didn't mention this. Is this because it's...
No, I just didn't mention it. But I can address it. Public art, I think it was implied when I was talking about art and civic activities, right? What's interesting about public art, and thank you for bringing that up, because it's something that a lot of people, I don't know, really understand the importance of it, but public art reflects our thoughts and our culture at the time. And also historically, some public art is problematic to me, right? And I'll leave that there. But public art in general is important. It also is, there are some boundaries, there's an element of control when we think about government, okay? And when we think about commissions, right? Commission public art. And when we think about resources. So now, we currently live in a space, right, in a world here in the United States where public art has been so drastically defunded. And so its significance is still there, but the importance of it is not necessarily recognized, and that's the arts in general. Rather, it's in educational spaces, but particularly public art. Now, different communities, right, reflect is that significance. It could be very different in another city, in another state, but there is a percentage of, and I can't remember the percentage, I don't know if it's like 1% or a tenth of a percent, of the of say like the city the city budget or the state budget, if you will, that's allocated to public art. And then also that in and of itself is an issue, but it's necessary. We also have to understand that who gets to create the public art, right? Because this becomes an access. Is there good or equal representation when it comes to artists who create public art for the community? Does it reflect everybody? Is it So is this artwork that is diverse in how it looks and in its messaging? Because there's some public art that, and this was recently, I believe in Indiana, there was, for example, a black artist who made this beautiful statue that was a replica of a statue from, I can't remember the country, it could have been Italy, Spain, but there was so much pushback because of his interpretation of that. And although he was commissioned to create that art, the people who protested and city taxpayers had their way and they took the statue down. So public art is meaningful, it's good, we need it, but sometimes there are issues, right, in and of itself when it comes to representation.
Okay, I'm sorry, you took off
the government being part of it.
Yeah.
I'm talking about murals that are set up by neighborhoods.
Okay.
And they don't have any money from the government. It has come from the people.
Yes.
I'd love to see, you know, six artists working at one time on a conception that they have developed.
Okay.
On a wall.
Yeah. I'm not from here. You don't have murals? I know of some murals. Are we talking about new murals? Is that what you want?
Right here. Look on the.
Okay, well, you and I, let's talk. We can make this happen. We can.
No, I mean, look right here.
Yeah, I'm looking. Yeah, I have, yeah.
Here at Cross Purposes.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, thank you, but yeah, it's important and it's a part of this.
My name is Jim Clinton. I'm the driver for this guy, John Murray, he said today, driving over, he's been coming for 5 years. Is that right, John?
50.
Oh, 50 years.
50.
So I didn't realize that. But I want to thank you for the breathe concept. I didn't realize I was an artist, and the project is going well, my own project.
Yes.
My question to you, if you were in a room, let's say you're a very accomplished person, if you had time, let's say some paper and pens, painting, what do you think you'd like to do? What would you paint or what would you do? Or what would you do if you had free time?
I don't even know what that looks like. but I'll indulge because I'm like, what would I? So I specifically like to do mixed media art. I like intertextuality, and I would probably focus on artwork that is figurative, like images of people mixed with text, mixed with words. What else is there? I like still life. I do abstract. I mostly work with oil and acrylic for the most part, and then oftentimes there's an overlay of wood pieces. So it is very mixed media art. And really,
in an afternoon on Sunday, you have from 3 to 5, what do you think you do?
Yeah, so it's typically on canvas, okay? It's typically me collecting like from magazines or from like any sort of prints. And then I gesso it on the, I'll paint the canvas first. I gesso the text as well as it connected with what I've drawn, right? And usually the work that I do is centered on things that I've read. So there's usually associated with like a specific narrative, or there's always a theme. It's oftentimes closely related to my research, which is black women and the black female body in representation. So when I talk about figurative art, I'm typically drawing an image of black women or painting in that way, and then also in associating words that connects to whatever the theme is I'm saying about the black female body.
Thank you, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
My favorite thing is texting. I send elaborate texts.
Mm-hmm.
I actually use punctuation, emojis, and I edit them before I send them.
Yes, I want to, you do? Oh, really? What are you using? I'm gonna pass this. This is a button, our buttons. Can I pass this around? Take a button that is a momentum about the Community Folk Arts Center, but in some of those buttons also reflect messages of wellness and art. So I just wanted to do that before I forget. Yes.
What is your relationship with other art forms in the community, like the Everson Museum, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so we have, and I don't know if we've done this since I've been here, but we have collaborated. We work with some of their curators. So Dylan is one who has curated a show at the Community Folk Arts Center. We often will engage in some of their professional arts development programs. Another good example will be Art Rage. We are coming together to put together a collaborative exhibition in 2021 that focuses on gun violence within the community. Hi.
Hi. What city of Syracuse's approximate size, if you're aware, mm-hmm. has an art scene that you wish could be transplanted here?
Oh, God.
and why?
Let's see here. I don't know if I'm accurate in the, you know, I'm still trying to figure out how big Syracuse is. And I've lived in a few other cities. Cincinnati may be a little bigger, several times bigger, so maybe that's not it. Maybe Cleveland, right? And that's probably still bigger, is that bigger than Syracuse? So then I don't know. I'm a big city lady, and so this is my first time really living in a city this size. I am cognizant, though, that there is a need to infuse more art within this community. There's a rich artistic scene here, but I would like to see more connectivity. And this goes back to your question, sir, about working together with other arts institutions to bring more opportunities, but also to expand the audiences that we have. Because oftentimes, I feel like we work in silos. And so there's ways in which we can build, right? So when I think of your question, I think about what I'd like to see that are in other cities, the type of support that is necessary for art institutions. So for example, Philadelphia has an amazing art scene. Atlanta has an amazing art scene, but they also are bigger cities, right? And it's just a different ethos and cultural attitude. I think that we have to really appreciate who we are and where we're at in Syracuse with the understanding that right now there is, there's a bubble here. We're on this bubble there's a lot of change going on within the city. There's a lot of opportunities. And I think that there is a healthy dose of enthusiasm that can help us to get to expand within the arts. So I'm very optimistic.
All right, please join me in thanking Dr. Tanisha Jackson.
Thank you.